This is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin. Coming up, some 4 million people call themselves NRA members, but that's only a fraction of gun owners in America. In a few minutes, we are going to speak with one lifelong gun owner who says the NRA does not represent him, and he'll tell us why in just a few minutes. But first, we want to talk more today about the war in Iraq. It started 10 years ago. Yesterday, we spoke with an American veteran. He told us about his experiences and what he thinks about his service now. Today, we want to speak with a man whose job was to write about the war, every gruesome part of it. And this might be a good time to tell you that this story might not be appropriate for all listeners. Joining us now is Abdul Razak Al-Sayidi. He is a former reporter for The New York Times. He recently wrote a piece in The New York Times magazine about one of the most infamous scenes of the war that he personally witnessed and how that moment has stayed with him all these years later. Abdul Razak, thank you so much for joining us. Actually, welcome back to the program. We've spoken with you before.
Well, thank you for having me again.
Can you just first tell us why you wanted to be a journalist?
Before the war, before 2003, I never worked in journalism. We didn't have real journalism during the Saddam era, but it's like telling the truth. So I feel there's a commitment that the people, especially in the U.S., they need to know exactly what's going on, you know, without, you know, propaganda or with or against this. So for me, this is really, you know, important that we're telling the truth and we describe the scene as it is, you know, for good or for bad.
The piece that you wrote for The Times was called The Unwilling Witness. It refers to a scene that many people in this country probably have in their heads even now. This was in March of 2004, and there was an attack in Fallujah against an American convoy, and there were four security contractors who were working for the firm then called Blackwater. And you got there, and you realized this was another one of those incidents where it was just you and an Iraqi driver, because non-Iraqi journalists, it just was understood to be too dangerous for them to go. So you get there. Do you mind if I ask what you saw?
So when we arrived, I saw a burned-out vehicle. They're completely burned. And there's mobs around there. They dismantle everything that they could find it useful. And then I asked, what happened? And they said, oh, there's four Americans were killed. And then I said, where are they? I said, oh, they took them to the bridge. And he said, how did they take them? He said, oh, they burned them and they dragged them to the bridge. And also I saw one flesh with a bone was dangling from the electricity wire. And someone, when I asked, where are they? And someone, he said, oh, look up. And I look up, he said, this is one of the remains. Oh, my God. So I feel so scared. I feel like, for me, it's like, you know, too much. I feel like disoriented a bit, but I'm here to reporting, so I have to get a story. Then I walked to the bridge. And then when I arrived at the bridge, I saw, two bodies where it's completely burned, were hanged, and there's two just on the ground, and the two on the ground, there are children there. One of the kids, I think he was 10 or like 11 years old, he was kicking one of the bodies, and he keep saying, "This is Pacha, Pacha," and Pacha it's in Iraqi meal made of the head of the sheep. And that, for me, you know, as a person, said, you know, this is like too much. I can't stand it. But also at the same time, I have my camera with me, but I was so scared if I would take pictures, maybe these mobs, you know, they were so excited, and mostly teenager children, and there was no policemen, no American soldiers, none. And then they look at me because I think maybe they ask myself, said, who's this? And then I find myself, some people there staring on me. And I know within one word, I could be maybe the fifth body. And they look at me and then I pretend also I'm excited, you know, with this. And and then I decide to leave. Mm-hmm. So I left. But I left with a story.
Well, you talked about the fact that in your piece you see this boy kicking this person who's just been killed, and you say to yourself, this child can't be human. But you also, you get back to the bureau, and you decided you were quit, but you didn't quit. Why didn't you quit?
Well, my bureau chief was very smart and very wise, and he's really good with the negotiation tactics. So he gave me, he said, you know, take a few days off, think about it, until I, you know, like when you get angry or you get anxious, and in a few days you just have peace. And he convinced me that we will be careful to not be exposed to this, you know, dangerous issues or whatever. And also I liked him. And I like my work. Mm. You know, I like my work with the Times. Then I decide, you know, then I decide to stay.
If you're just joining us, this is the second in our series of conversations about the Iraq War, looking back over 10 years. Yesterday, we heard from an American veteran, a Marine. Today, we are speaking with former New York Times reporter Abdulrazak al-Sayidi. Eventually, you did quit. This was after two of your colleagues were assassinated. And you did travel to the U.S. and undertook graduate studies. But you met a woman named Donna. Can you tell us about that?
In 2009, 5 years after this incident, I was at Harvard. I was a student at the Kennedy School. And an Yemen fellow at 2009 class, they told me that a mother of one of the peace people were killed. She will come to Cambridge because there is an informal event. And then she told me that she really wants to talk to you. I was reluctant to meet her. But at the end, I feel really sorry because I think she's a mother and know how much I love my mother. So I thought about my mother and I said, that meeting might help her. So let me do it. And we met for breakfast. And she looked at me and she said, please tell me what happened. That was her question. You know, what could you say to a mother when I saw all this scene, you know, to tell her what happened? So I tried to be, like, elusive or try to change the subject because she asked me a couple of questions. And she said, please tell me what happened. I need to know why, and then why did that happen to my son? Then I gave her a short answer and I said, he was killed very quickly. That's what the eyewitness told me, that the insurgents, they trapped them, they shoot them, they killed them, and they left. And then the mobs, when they gathered, and it was chaos, so they burned them, they dragged them, etc. Then I told her he was killed very very quickly. And then I couldn't stand to, to see a mother. And I told her my mom, because when I lost my brother, he was hung.
By Saddam Hussein's forces in Abu Ghraib. Correct.
Yes, by secret force, he was executed. But they didn't tell us. They executed him. They buried him in a secret cemetery in the backyard of Abu Ghraib. And then because 2003, when Saddam's regime was removed, then I looked for him. Then I found his grave.
Do you think it helped, Donna, to hear this?
Yeah. I said, tell me what's happened in that day. How did you know? And then she started talking to me and said, you know, the morning she was listening to the radio, and then she heard about what happened in Fallujah on the radio, and then she emailed her son because she thought about it, and she emailed him and said, please be careful, and let's talk today when you have time, whatever. And 2 hours later, she knew that Jerry, her son, was one of them. Mm. So it was like a therapy session. Mm. It was because the trauma of war, we exchange it. It's we help each other. So it's like, you know, we counsel each other. I listened to her, and then she listened to me, and we both cried. So I think that helped both of us. Because this kind of trauma, it's lasts for a long time.
Abdulrazak, before we let you go, and thank you for speaking with us. I know it's not easy to talk about these things.
Sure.
I know you're speaking for yourself. It's 10 years after the start of the war, and, you know, you are an Iraqi citizen, but you live in the U.S. You lost your own brother to Saddam Hussein. You lost colleagues to the war. How do you think about this war 10 years on?
Wow. the answer. It's not easy. But I could say in 2003, most of the Iraqis people, or the majority, were happy with this war because that was the only way to remove the regime, the brutal regime, and that we thought that's the end of dictatorship, of oppression, of injustice. And we hoped that is the beginning of a new future, of freedom, of democracy, of a new Iraq. But things, unfortunately, it's things getting worse and worse and worse. And I always say that, I said, we gained the freedom, we were liberated, for sure. But we lost the country. We lost our security, our stability, our identity. And since 2003, Iraqis people, they are living in violent political crisis and uncertainty. So that's what I see. We gained something, but we lost other things. So,
how are you?
I'm okay, thank you. I'm doing. I finished my degree at Harvard, and I think I have a successful career. But you know, as I said, I'm talking to my mom almost every day. My family's still there in Iraq, but the trauma of the war, I think, lasts for a very long time.
That was Abdulrazak Al-Sayidi. He is a former reporter for the New York Times and a former Nieman Fellow at Harvard. He's currently working on a project to advance human rights in the Middle East, and he joined us from member station WGBH in Boston. Abdulrazak, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Coming up, more than 4 million gun owners belong to the NRA, but that means tens of millions of gun owners don't. We speak with one of them.
I feel like the boy that poked the hornet's nest with his fishing rod. If you're not careful in this debate, you'll find yourself shouting.
Hopefully no shouting, just a conversation with a lifelong gun owner who wrote about why the NRA does not speak for him. That's ahead on Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin. We'll be right back.